Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In the early 1960s, Boston was terrorized by one of New England's most infamous serial killers, the Boston Strangler. In just a year and a half, the Strangler raped and killed 13 women in eastern Massachusetts.
By now, the story had been published abroad. The London Daily News and Star reported that another Jack the Ripper might be loose in Boston.
That's some archival sound from a new podcast called Stranglers. The podcast examines the murders and the victims, and it questions if the man who eventually confessed was in fact the killer. Joining us now is the host of the new podcast and series, Portland Helmick. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
It's great to have you. Well, first of all, can you just give us, for those folks who don't remember the story, just a brief synopsis of the Strangler, what happened, why everyone was so terrified for all those years in the 60s.
Yeah, so as you were saying, they happened in the 1960s. The first murder was June 14th, 1962. Anna Slessers was the name of the woman, and she was murdered in her apartment. And of course, at that time, nobody thought anything of it. It was just one woman who was murdered. But then all of a sudden, 2 weeks later, two more women were murdered. And by the end of the summer, five women had been murdered, and they were all older women. They were white women. They lived alone, and they were murdered with articles of their own clothing. They were strangled with nylon stockings or a pillowcase, and they were posed in very degrading positions, obscene positions. And then there was a bit of a lull in the case, and then in 1962, at the end of that year, a younger woman was murdered. And so we had five older women murdered, and then a younger woman was murdered, and then most of the later victims were younger women. So between 1962 and 1964, 13 women had been murdered, and nobody for that whole period of time, they had no idea who it was.
Right. But ultimately, a man named Albert DeSalvo confessed to the murders in 1964. And he had
1965.
Sorry. And he was on trial and had been and was eventually convicted of rapes, but never put on trial for the murders themselves.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, that's because F. Lee Bailey, his attorney, worked out a deal. But yes, he was put on trial for rape, for breaking and entering, for sexual assault, but he was never, ever charged for any of these murders.
He was sentenced to life, but then was later stabbed to death in prison, right?
In 1973, yes. And there's a lot of controversy about who that was and how that happened.
Well, let's give listeners a little bit of taste of what the podcast, again, it's called Stranglers, what the podcast sounds like. So here's a clip.
This is New England.
Articles of silk or satin.
We were all afraid to let strangers come through the door.
Half a million fingerprints.
We started locking the doors.
Abnormal sexual tendency.
It was a manhunt of the century.
All we knew, somebody was killing people.
Now, you spoke to people who knew some of the victims, right?
Yes, that's one of the things that we needed to do in the podcast to really bring some of these women's stories to life. So yes, we found the granddaughter of the fourth victim, Ida Erga. Her name was Debbie Amati. And we spoke to some of the friends of Mary Sullivan. She was the final victim who was killed in 1964.
She was only 19 at the time, right?
She was 19 at the time. She was the final victim, yeah. And it's been hard, though, to find some of these people, obviously, because this happened 50 years ago, right? So there are a lot of these people have passed away. So it's a lot of research to track these people down.
And once you did track them down, were they willing to talk with you, or did they just not want to revisit those terrible memories?
Well, interestingly, the granddaughter, she was actually pretty, she was lovely. Yeah, she was willing to talk to us. Yes, I did call. I'll just say that I called the son of one of the victims, and I spoke to his wife, and she was very upset with me on the phone and had absolutely no interest in talking to me. And I can completely understand why. It's uncomfortable to call some of these people up and say, I know that, you know, your father or your son-in-law or your brother was murdered by so-and-so. That's uncomfortable. But yeah. Yes, we have been lucky enough to have some people cooperate with us.
Well, I mean, one of those folks, you found a woman who may have actually narrowly escaped DeSalvo?
That's a great episode. She's fantastic. Yeah, it's episode 4. It's called Abnormal Psychology. And we, through John DiNatale, actually, and he's the son of Detective Phil DiNatale, who is one of the lead investigators on the case, we found a woman named Adele Roof. And Adele lived at 515 Park Drive in Boston in the summer of 1962. And what's fascinating about Adele is that just a few months after she moved out of that apartment, the seventh victim of the Boston Strangler moved in. And she had had contact with Albert DeSalvo. He'd come to her apartment, and he had knocked on the door, and she had actually invited him in, and he wanted, this was sort of his ploy. He would knock on women's doors and he would say he was a modeling scout and he wanted to measure them. And that's what he did with Adele. But she was quick enough to say, you know what, my roommates are sleeping in the next room. Can we go out and do this on the front stoop? And she got him out of her apartment. But some other women were not as lucky.
Wow. Sorry, I just got to chill up and down my spine just listening to that.
It's really creepy, isn't it?
Okay, so another interesting thing, a very interesting thing that you ask in the course in the podcast is whether or not there could have been another strangler, mm-hmm. right? So just a little bit of background here. As we mentioned earlier, DeSalvo confessed but was never put on trial for the murders themselves. And it was just a couple of years ago, what, 2013, that
yes.
Boston police say they were reported that they'd actually found DNA evidence that gave them, quote, a 99.9% certainty that DeSalvo was the killer. But in the podcast, you question that. And why is that?
Well, one of the main reasons is, and I sort of alluded to it when I first started speaking here just today, is that the first five women were older. Mm-hmm. And they were sexually assaulted with objects. They were not raped through penetrative intercourse. The later victims, many of them were raped, some of them were not. But because these first five victims were so different from the others, they were older, some of the later victims were raped, they lived with roommates. Basically, the killer's MO changed. And because the MO changed, it's very unusual for a serial killer to change his or her MO midstream. And so that's one of the reasons that people have long said that maybe DeSalvo didn't do all of these murders.
Okay. So then in the podcast, you have this exchange with Mark Safrick. He's a veteran of the FBI who did research in the field of elderly female homicides. And as you talk to him, at first he says there's a high likelihood that the murders were committed by the same offender. But then you press him about this change. And here's what he says.
I would say it's very, very unusual for a sexual murder of elderly women to change targets both in race and age to a much younger victim. I would say that's I've not seen it.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I'm glad that you played that because that's another thing I should have said. Not only were the first five victims older, and then all of a sudden the victim in 1962, Sophie Clark, she was 20 years old when all of the other victims had been 55. She was also African-American, mm-hmm. so and she had roommates. So it was just such a strange change in MO that a lot of people have long said maybe Albert DeSalvo committed that last murder, but maybe he didn't do all of them.
Right. So when someone like Safrick, who was served in the FBI for, what, 23 years— you know, says what he said. What were you thinking at that point?
I think that there's reason to believe that DeSalvo did not necessarily commit all of them. And I really am not going to come down one way or the other. I honestly, I've been working on this for like a year and a half, and I still don't know. I really don't. It's absolutely mystifying. The whole case is mystifying. Yeah.
Well, so this is why I really appreciate the podcast, because, I mean, you raise these interesting questions and also point us to a story that I hadn't really heard of before.
It's a great story.
In the fifth episode, you talk about the Gotham Strangler, Charles Terry. Now, who is Charles Terry?
Charles Terry was a drifter from Maine, and this is a fascinating story. And our associate producer, Taylor DeWicke, he found this story when our company, Northern Light Productions, was producing the film Confessions of the Boston Strangler. And this guy was a drifter from Maine, and in 1963, he committed a murder in a Times Square hotel of a woman named Zenobia Clegg. She was white. She was older, 62, and he murdered her with an article of her own clothing, a scarf, and he raped her with a bottle. And the detective who interrogated him in 1963 thought that the MO of that strangling was so similar to the murders that were going on in Boston, because by that time, I think eight women had been murdered. And he thought they were so similar that he pressed him and he said, "Have you ever been to Boston?" And in fact, he denied it, but he found out later that he had been to Boston. His grandmother lived in Boston. He had been in Boston the summer of 1962 when the first five stranglings were going on. So this detective, whose name was Detective Tom Cavanaugh, always believed that he was the original Boston Strangler.
Wow. So you've talked to Detective Cavanaugh's son, Brian Cavanaugh.
Yeah.
And we have a clip here from the podcast. And he told you about how his father really tried as hard as he could to pressure Boston police detectives to even consider Charles Terry as a possible suspect for the Boston Strangler murders. And here's what Brian Cavanaugh told you.
They did their best to motivate the Boston police into following up on Charles Terry, but they struck out. Unfortunately, Boston was beyond the command of the New York City detectives, and my dad's jurisdiction only extended to where he was, not to Boston. In fact, his detectives, Detectives Mackett and LaCurta, were chased out of Boston by the Boston police, and they were told, "Your badge is no good here. Go back to New York."
Great voice, isn't it? Yeah. Great voice.
And that Boston-New York rivalry. I mean, so did the BPD eventually gave up on this possible other lead?
That's exactly what happened, yeah. So Brian Kavanaugh says that his father says that it was sort of territorialism, that Boston didn't want New York solving their strangling case.
Huh.
Now, I'm not saying that that's true or not, but that's what Brian says.
Well, in the last minute or so that we have, Portland, I just want to note that you're working with Northern Light Productions, who also created a documentary called
Yes.
Confessions of a Boston Strangler.
Right.
So why make this podcast in addition to that?
Well, because of what you just played. That's one of the reasons. The Charles Terry story was in the film Confessions of the Boston Strangler. It was about 20 minutes long. And when the DNA evidence came out in 2013 linking Mary Sullivan to Albert DeSalvo, or basically DeSalvo to Mary Sullivan, the Charles Terry story got dropped from the film. Mm-hmm. So it never got to see the light of day. So the film went out, you know, it was produced, and Investigation Discovery came back to Northern Light Productions a while back and said, let's make a podcast and we can include that story.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons we did it. But of course, we can get into so much more detail in a podcast than you could ever get into in a film. A film is 90 minutes or 2 hours long.
You have multiple hours and a whole stream of episodes with a podcast.
Yeah, this is going to be like 8 to 9 hours long when we're done. It's about 45 minutes an episode.
Well, Portland Helmick is host of the 12-part podcast Stranglers. I think episode 8 is coming out pretty soon.
Yes, they come out on Wednesdays. Episode 8 will come out on January 18th.
Well, you can find a link to it all at our website, radioboston.org. Portland, it's been a great pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.